there are essentially two arguments that Tom are making on appeal. The first goes to the workers' compensation court's determination that the claimant incurred, appellee incurred back injury, whether there was sufficient evidence to make that determination. And the second is whether the court, pursuant to Rule 11, and also with the intersection of Rule 48141, whether the court made a sufficiently definite determination and findings for appellate review. Relative to the back, I want to get out in front of this and say I am not asking this court to reweigh evidence. It may seem that way. I understand that the appellate courts, it is not their jobs to reweigh all the evidence. Our argument in relation to the bank. Now, there was an angle for it, no question about it, except that really wasn't a disputed issue. Essentially, what occurred was Judge Fitzgerald of the Workers' Compensation Court made the determination based on, as I understand, the opinions of Drs. Kennedy and Dr. Duck that the claimant incurred a back injury also. Our issue and our concern is, in relation to the standard, is that we believe it was clear error to do that. Why do we believe it was clear error to make that determination? Because this court reviews in terms of whether there was sufficient evidence to make that basis. Our concern on this, and I would concede that there are no strong appellate court cases on this, we do cite when the Workers' Compensation Court initially was appealing, when the appellate process was to the three-judge panel. There are some cases, or there's a case cited in here, which we believe is similar. Our concern is that the two doctors relied upon by Judge Fitzgerald both acknowledged they didn't have any information, or they had very little to no information regarding claimant's pre-existing injuries. Once again, if you look at the brief, and our citation is relative to the same, case law indicates that in situations like this, the doctor's opinions are obviously only as good as the information that they have based on.
But does that go to the weight?
Well, Your Honor, I would argue that in this context, it goes to whether there's any probative value of that evidence at all, which is a little bit different to the weight. I understand if one doctor says, I've seen A, B, C, and D, and the other doctor says, I have seen A, B, C, and D, and they come to varying opinions. I think that goes to the weight.
Why could they not have been given the pre-existing condition records and asked to review them and perhaps modify their opinions?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Well, you're saying that they had little to no information regarding the pre-existing condition. Why couldn't they have been given that information and then asked if that changes their opinion?
Well, Your Honor, that's a good question. My answer would be, I think there's reasons why it wasn't given to them. They weren't our experts.
That doesn't change the fact that they could be deposed, questioned, and asked about the pre-existing condition.
First off, one of whom was, and that expert essentially indicated, yes, I'm unaware of all this evidence over here, but I don't care. But
did he say that?
Essentially, well, I want to make sure that I'm not impugning Dr. Duck, but he essentially indicated that he didn't care. Now, plaintiff's counsel or appellee's counsel may clarify that, but that was my recollection of the testimony.
Did he say it wouldn't change his opinion even if he saw it?
I don't recall specifically.
Wasn't Dr. Duck, his family physician?
He was.
Okay, but he had treated the appellee for a significant period of time.
He had for various conditions.
Okay. And so his opinion, to some degree, was that not based on what he observed before the ankle injury and then what he observed after the ankle injury?
It was, but without any of the orthopedic records, without any of the pre-existing imaging, without any awareness that he was undergoing
any kind of injury.
I'm sorry. Yes, also, that was based in part on part of his observation, but as indicated in our brief, he also acknowledged that he had no review
was not as problematic and symptomatic until after the ankle injury. That they all acknowledged there may have been this, there was this pre-existing condition, but the symptoms became exacerbated, you know, or aggravated after the ankle injury because of his change in his gait and problems with his ankle. Isn't that kind of what they're saying, those doctors, which Judge Fitzgerald relied upon?
It is. Yeah. An argument would be that, however, they couldn't make that determination by virtue of the fact that they didn't have sufficient information. If there are no more questions specific at this point, do you want to get on to the next, just to make sure that I preserve that?
Sure.
I think the cleaner issue is specifically Judge Fitzgerald made the determination that a claimant was permanently totally disabled. The problem is, under Rule 11, which is the court has had to deal with before, and also under Rule 48, 141. Judge Fitzgerald didn't detail why or on what basis he made that determination of permanent total disability. This gets back to Dr. Duck again. It could be argued that he's relying on Dr. Duck's opinion. Dr. Duck does not address any kind of permanent mental restrictions. He indicates, as I believe, I'm paraphrasing, that claimant is unable to maintain gainful employment. And from there, the judge just indicates he's unable to maintain gainful employment and he's permanently totally disabled.
But he does refer to Dr. Kennedy, and that Dr. Kennedy, you know, talks about objective findings, and further Dr. Kennedy does indicate what the permanent restrictions are, which is that he's only able to be employed in a sedentary capacity and he has to, you know, alter his position every 30 minutes and avoid work above the shoulders. And Judge Fitzgerald actually refers to Dr. Kennedy before saying he is now unable to work. Is it that sufficient basis to say he's 100% disabled? He is now unable to work with those restrictions.
Sorry,
no.
I would also note that there are at least three other indications in the record or recitations of different restrictions, I believe, in that award. He doesn't adopt it. He doesn't say, I've adopted, because the problem is under 48-141, because these workers' compensation cases are kind of living creatures in some respects. After an award, there's still opportunities for the parties to continue to modify.
So if he had just made a simple reference to the loss of earning power report that Helen Long generated, in which she, relying on Dr. Kennedy's report, says he has 100% disability.
If he had detailed what his basis for making
would
that
would he have to have done that? Could he have just said, in relying on the court-appointed vocational rehabilitation counselor, and she offered different variations of loss of earning based on which doctor you believed. And in this case, Judge Fitzgerald opted for Dr. Kennedy, and based on Dr. Kennedy, Helen Long says 100% loss of earning.
Had he specified?
You're saying he needed to say that? He needed to make a specific reference to Helen Long's report? He couldn't just say, hey, based on Dr. Kennedy and the restrictions given, he's unable to work.
Your Honor, for us to be able to have any kind of meaningful understanding of what the actual restrictions were.
Well, we know what they are because he says it right before he says the court finds claimant to be permanently totally disabled. He refers to Dr. Kennedy. He refers to him now being unable to work. What do you need to be more meaningful?
What I believe is necessary and required under Rule 11 is an indication of these are the restrictions that arise out of the claimant's work injury. And these form the basis of why he or she is permanently totally disabled or what that extent of disability is.
So you're just saying his reference to Dr. Kennedy and his reliance on Dr. Kennedy and everything he says related to Dr. Kennedy's findings are insufficient unless he sort of pulls it all together and he's rendering a permanent total disability determination. Because it's all there. It's just, it sounds like you want it all tied up in a nice bow. No, please.
Go ahead.
Your Honor, respectfully, I disagree with your interpretation of what Judge Fitzgerald did here. He's referenced four different restrictions, none of which he indicated were the basis of his determination. If he had relied entirely upon Dr. Kennedy, I would be in front of you relative to this issue.
Even though he didn't say it, do you believe he
he relied at all on the opinion of Ms. Long?
I don't know, because he didn't say anything. I will say this, Your Honor. I'm not contesting that there is evidence in the record which could support his ultimate determination. My problem or my concern is the fact that I have no way, 6 months from now, if Mr. If the appellee's condition changes, I have no way to measure that because I don't know what the basis of reliance on that determination is.
That's a very legitimate
point. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Sorry for going over.
All right, how much did we go over?
1 minute.
All right, we'll add that to Ms. Schultz's time, and you may proceed.
May it please the court, I'm Jamie Schultz here on behalf of the appellee plaintiff, Mr. Oden. At the time of this March 7th, 2015 accident, Mr. Oden was 61 years old and had been driving a semi-tractor trailer for the appellant since January 2014. In that accident, Mr. Oden sustained fractures to his distal right fibula and lateral and posterior malleolus. Mr. Oden was placed in a fracture boot shortly after the initial injury and underwent a very extensive course of conservative care.
Ms. Schultz, could you just jump to where we left off, please, with regard to, is the opinion sufficiently stated for us to have a meaningful review of what Judge Fitzgerald was basing his permanent disability decision on?
I believe so, Your Honor. And it's because in assessing a claimant's disability, physical restrictions are only a part of it. Once the claimant establishes a cause of disability, the trial judge is not limited to the evidence. The trial judge, or to that particular evidence, the trial judge may also rely on the claimant's testimony to determine the extent of disability. Disability, in contrast to impairment, is of course an economic inquiry. It can only be determined within the context of the personal, social, or occupational demands or statutory or regulatory requirements that the individual is unable to meet because of the impairment. It means that because of an injury, a worker cannot earn wages in the same kind of work or work of a similar nature that he or she was trained or accustomed to perform. And in this case, we know that the defendant did not offer any work to the plaintiff as a truck driver, as he had been accustomed to, once those permanent work restrictions were assigned.
But wouldn't you agree with Mr. Barta that it is difficult to know when the judge says something as broad as he's unable to work? We don't know what restrictions are prohibiting Mr. Oden from working, and to the extent there's a desire to seek a modification down the road, there's no way to know how to measure that if the restrictions, you know, improve, because we don't know what the judge was relying on.
And even though we don't know what restrictions the judge was relying on, we do know the ultimate finding of them is that he's permanently and totally disabled. I think at any point in time, 6 months from now, when the plaintiff's condition improves and there's a new set of work restrictions, you have a loss of earning power done. And you'll see, is Mr. Oden still permanently and totally disabled, or is Mr. Oden only have a 50% loss of earning power? And the vocational counselor suggests that this is there's work he can return to within those restrictions. I think the judge can re-examine that at that time. I don't necessarily think we have to have a set, hard and fast set of restrictions, because other factors within that inquiry change as well.
Do you think the fact that Judge Fitzgerald referred to Dr. Kennedy pretty much in the same sentence that he says he's now unable to work, that Oden is now unable to work, that his reliance on Dr. Kennedy means he's also then relying on the restrictions which Dr. Kennedy addresses?
I think that is a very fair interpretation of the award of Judge Fitzgerald. And I also think when Judge Fitzgerald points out that Dr. Duck says he's unable to maintain gainful employment, I mean, he relies on that report when he indicates that he finds him permanently and totally disabled. That's the finding point for the judge, but I don't, I think all of it played into it.
Is there any explanation for why the judge didn't simply refer to Helen Long's report?
I don't know. I wish he would have.
I mean,
but I don't think it changes the outcome, you know, that this court can remand it back to the trial judge, and the judge can say, I relied on Helen Long's report, and it just delays benefits for my client.
Do you believe his opinion complies with what the Nebraska Supreme Court said in the Seidel or Seidel versus Travelers case?
I think the court examines those factors for Rule 11, and it's a lengthy award when it's discussing all the restrictions that the plan does have. And really, when it comes down to it, when you're looking at the Seidel factors, you look at, are you able to work? Is the kind of work you are able to do available in your labor market? If you're able and it's available, are you the one who's likely going to be hired? Even if Mr. Oak is hired, can he keep the job? Dr. Duck says no. No, he cannot. He's not capable of maintaining gainful employment. So even said yes to all.
And I understand that, but do you believe the order as written by Judge Fitzgerald sets those things out and complies with Seidel in that way?
I don't know. There's no place in the award where he discusses each of those four factors independently, but I think it's enough that he gets to the one criteria that says, are you able to maintain gainful employment? And the answer is no. What do the other three matter? You can get a job, but you can't keep it for any length of time that matters.
I guess that brings us back, though, then to the, so if it's reviewed in 6 months, if there's a change, then if we don't analyze those factors, then that makes it more difficult, doesn't it, in 6 months down the road?
I think as long as you have a loss of earning power from an expert who says he's no longer permanently and totally disabled based on some new set of restrictions that isn't in the record, I think that's fair game to bring to the trial court to ask them to reanalyze whether Mr. Oak is permanently and totally disabled still.
So you're only analyzing based on the later information?
Any new information, correct.
New information.
Are there any other questions from the court?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I know we took Mr. Barta over, and so there's no time for rebuttal. The case will be taken under submission. Thank you, counsel, for being here, and you are excused.
And may your travels to you too. We did a poor job, didn't we? Bringing everybody from Lincoln.